Hello, we're back for the final module of this Azure RMS Jumpstart. In this module, we're going to be taking a look at integrating Azure RMS with on-premises services such as Exchange and SharePoint, but specifically, we're going to be taking the example of a file server and integrating with a workflow that you might see on a typical file server. So first off, we're going to talk about the architecture that you need to put in place here in order to enable the on-premises side of this particular scenario, and we're also going to look at the configuration steps of how you physically set this stuff up. So what does the architecture look like?
So one of the easiest ways to explain this is just simply with a picture, and yep. I have to admit we just took this straight down from the documentation because it is very easy to show it like this. We have our three scenarios here for on-services, on-premises services that we can actually support at the moment, which is the Exchange server, the SharePoint server, and our file server, as you said. That then talks to an RMS connector. Now, we've shown it here as actually one computer, but in a deployment scenario, you would always want at least two for redundancy and for to make sure that you can always get good access for when you need it. And that basically acts as a relay. So the servers think they're talking to an on-premises RMS server, but they're not. It's actually relaying everything up to the cloud. So at that point, everything goes up to Azure RMS, as we can see in our picture here. Your Azure RMS service is activated, which is obviously we've already covered before. And that would integrate then with the Azure AD, where you've already synchronized your user accounts.
And one of the things I actually really like about the way that the connector has been developed and delivered, much like all of the connectors for Azure, actually, you don't need to go ahead and configure anything weird and different on your firewall. It's all happening over port 443 and port 80, which actually makes deployment very, very simple in an on-premises environment. Getting access to it, though, requires certain licenses.
So at the moment, this is our one differentiator when you're looking at the different subscriptions that you have available for Azure RMS. If you have an Office 365 subscription that includes Azure RMS, then that doesn't actually include the file server FCI integration piece. You can still use it with Exchange Server. You can still use it with your SharePoint server. But when it comes to configuring FCI, if you want that particular piece, then you need a subscription, which is either EMS or the RMS standalone. So when you go back to have a look at the chart here, you can see that at the moment, that's our one differentiator. We looked at the doc tracking. At the moment, it is available for all the subscriptions. But as this shows, that's just for preview.
Yeah, so it's going to be changing very, very soon. So if you want to be using the file services connector after this, then you definitely want to be getting one of the correct licenses. What we're going to be showing you in a couple of seconds is a couple of different options around the workflows that you can put in place for file services. So the first one is making NTFS permissions a little bit more sticky. The way that we think about permissioning up a file server traditionally has been to set a user's specific access rights to those files. So we would say, if the user is in this particular group, then this is what's going to happen to them in terms of being able to read, write, execute those files. So we can now actually use the file server to leverage Azure Rights Management in order to essentially make the file protected wherever it goes if the user takes it off of the file server. And we can also do content filtering, which can feel a little bit like magic when it starts working, and it'll actually look at the contents of the file, use strings or regular expressions in order to actually match up contents to things which might be a little bit worrying if they left your organization. So you could set up a regular expression, a regex, to look for credit card numbers, social security numbers, any personal identifiers, or you could even look for things that maybe certain departments would put into a file. So for example, a great example is that legal often put confidential into their files, and therefore anything that had the word confidential in, you would automatically be able to protect. And you'd be doing that by working really closely with the parts of your business that are actually involved in these. So in the case of legal, you'd work with your lawyers to work out what the standard legal text is that they would have inside of documents that are only intended to be viewed by people inside the company. And then you take those requirements and build them into your file classification infrastructure. So the overall steps for setting this up are, firstly, Well, we've talked about it a few times. You actually need to have Azure RMS activated. The next thing you need to do is go and download and install the connector onto multiple servers. Now, as we discussed, you don't just want to have the connector running on a single server. If you do that, you're going to be in a situation where if that one server goes down, everybody is going to lose access to RMS, and therefore future documents won't be able to be protected. Obviously, the documents that have already been protected, the protection is going to remain with them, but access to those documents from within those environments may become slightly more tricky. When we start thinking about that, we're going to be setting up load balancing so that the connector server that we're going to see inside of the environment only has one name inside of DNS. Very, very simple, set up with network load balancing inside of Windows Server. So again, very easy to deploy. Then we have to get into the nuts and bolts of configuring file classification infrastructure, which actually is not that difficult. I'm going to take you through that in a demo in a few moments' time, and you'll see how easy it can be to enable FCI. And then we have to go and configure the file server, or the Exchange server, or the SharePoint server that are going to be using the connector in order to be able to talk to the connector. Again, very easy. We'll see that in a few moments' time. And then finally, we have to configure whichever service it is. So in our case, it's going to be file services to use the correct templates for the correct files. So let's take a look at it. It's a lot easier to explain what's going on as we start to walk through a demo. So I'm going to move back to my environment here, and I'm actually going to move to my file server, which in this case is running on my domain controller. And I'm currently inside of the Active Directory Administrative Center on Windows Server 2012 R2. And within here, I have a dynamic access control pane or workspace. Now, within this dynamic access control workspace, I have access to see what my central access policies are, what claim types I'm using for all different parts of DAC. But in this case, the only thing I'm interested in is my resource properties. So I'm going to go into my resource properties. And these are the parts of the classification infrastructure that tell that we push down to a file so that we can identify what particular things are, what particular attributes about a file are going to be useful for our classification. So in this case, I've enabled confidentiality, and I've also enabled impact. So these are two attributes that would potentially say what the business impact of the file is if you consider the loss. So if we lost this file, would it be a high, low, or medium impact? And then thinking about things from a confidentiality point of view, how confidential should the file be? Should it be very confidential, not very confidential at all, somewhere in between? And we have a whole load of these that have been predefined as well within Dynamic Access Control. Once those have been applied, they will then, via group policy, be applied down to our file servers. So we will then start to see that within file classification, which is actually enabled through File Service Resource Manager, which is an additional optional feature you'll have to install onto a file server, you'll then start to see those classification properties appearing. So in this case, confidentiality and impact, which we've pushed down through group policy, have appeared on this particular machine. I'll just highlight those, confidentiality and impact. And you can see that those are global policies that are being pushed down from our dynamic access control. Having defined those, we can just go in and view those global properties. We'll see the different levels. And we can actually get really custom here, and we can change those different levels to be various different things that make more sense within our organization, but you don't actually have to. The next thing that we need to do is actually put some classification rules in place. So in this case, I've actually created two classification rules. Let's look at the first one here for all confidential. And this classification rule is actually on the first tab here, the general tab, it's just giving us a name and telling us that it's turned on. The scope tab is more interesting. On this tab, we're actually saying that this is going to apply to any files which are marked as being group or user files. And we're also going to, that we also know that those group and user files are located in our D data volume. We can add additional areas if we want to, add specific directory paths. But then we're going to say, what are we going to do in order to classify these files? In this case, we've applied a folder classifier, which means that anything which is inside of this folder is going to receive this classification level. So here we're saying that anything inside of our ddata folder is automatically going to be, we're automatically going to set the confidentiality attribute to moderate. So anything here is going to be moderately confidential inside of our organization. So you might do this on a departmental file share, for example. And then we can say how often we're going to reevaluate the properties of a particular file. Having set that up, I've also set up a slightly more restrictive rule. And this second classification rule, in this case, the scope is just for the ddata folder. I'm not even including all group and user files. This classification, however, is a content classifier. So this is going to look inside the detail of the file. And assuming that the content classifier is matched, we're going to apply the property of highly confidential to that particular file. A little further down, we can see what the parameters of this classification are actually going to be. So what's going to make this these actual files become highly confidential? If we go into configure, you can see that a very, very simple rule is all that's been set up here. So if a file contains the word confidential, contains the string confidential in any case, at least once, then it's going to trigger the rule that will classify it as highly confidential. And then again, we say how often we're going to automatically reevaluate the files in that particular location. The next thing that we have inside of this environment is that we've set up a couple of file management tasks. Now, this is where we're actually going to take that classification and apply the rights management to those classifications. So first off, let's have a look at the top one of these two. Let's edit the file management task. Here again, you can see we've got the name specified. We can say which particular files this file management task is going to apply to. So we're applying this to our group and user files. Say what the action is going to be. Now, you can see here it's actually retrieving RMS templates. It's going off to try and find RMS templates from the connector server. Haven't actually configured the connector server yet, so it's not going to find anything at this point. Once it's actually gone through that process, we're then going to run on a schedule this particular rule. So in order to be able to configure that action, let's go and set up our RMS server, our RMS connector server. I'm going to move across to one of the other servers in my environment. And we'll sign as administrator. And I've already downloaded the connector files from the Microsoft download site. I'm just going to go ahead and run setup. And the very first thing it's going to ask me to do is, do I want to install the rights management connector or just put the administration tools onto this machine? Obviously, I want to install the connector. So we'll say next. I'll fully read the license terms and then I'll click next. Now it's asking me for my credentials for my Azure Rights Management Service. So let's type in those creds. And you'll notice that I've immediately entered the details wrong, and it's going to come back. So it is checking that my creds are correct, so you can't go wrong at that point. Next, it's going to move into the confirmation stage and make sure that we're OK with everything. And now, because it knows that we aren't yet elevated, it's going to elevate us up to administrator. And it's going to complete the installation process on this particular machine, installing the connector and setting everything up. Now, in a normal environment, you wouldn't just set up one, as we mentioned a few times. You'd set this up on a couple of machines. And we'd also go and configure network load balancing, including a single DNS name that would point to the load balancer and then out to the two or more connector servers that you've got in place in your environment. But in this case, I'm not going to set any of that up. We're just going to wait for the connector to complete its installation, which hopefully isn't going to take it too long.
So while we're waiting, just to let people know that you can install this on a Windows Server 2012 R2 2012 or Windows Server 2008 R2 computer. It doesn't have to be dedicated to this, but one of the important things to remember is that it shouldn't be installed on one of the servers that you're actually want to connect to. So it shouldn't be installed on your file server itself. It shouldn't actually be installed on your Exchange server, for example. And sometimes that catches people out.
Yeah, I've actually installed this onto my Azure AD Sync server, which again is probably not the best place to have it installed, but in this kind of environment, it's not a huge problem for me. So now we're going to launch the connector to authorize the particular servers that are going to be talking back to Azure RMS. And you're going to see that this has actually already been pre-authorized for this particular server. And you can see that my DC is already in here. I've repeated this previously to make sure it's going to work, which is always helpful when you're doing a live demo. So the server is added in. We can see that it's the FCI server type. But I'll hit Add just to show you the process of adding another role. So we would select what particular type of server we're going to be adding, whether it's going to be Exchange, SharePoint, or File Server. And then you just browse Active Directory to find the server on-prem that you're going to be pointing to. Having done that, we hit Close. And that's the connector server configured. We now need to go and configure the file server to talk to the connector server. And that's where this PowerShell file that you download, the gen-connector config PowerShell script, comes into play. So I've actually copied that across to my domain controller already, which is going to be my file server in this case. So we'll just switch back to that file server. And on the file server, you can see that I've actually opened up the PowerShell inside of the ISE. And I've just added in here the URL, sorry, the line of PowerShell that you actually need in order to be able to configure. So in this case, we're going to run the Gen connector. We're going to directly connect this server up to our connector server, in this case called Sync, and we're going to run the set FCI 2012 parameter at the end. So that's going to make this configuration happen for us. I'll just hit Enter, and I'm going to say run once. There we go. Now that's going to make the changes required on this machine. I could actually have this script output a group policy object that I could go and deploy as well, as another alternative for deployment, or I could have it output a registry file, which I could then go and install onto my file servers, or Exchange servers, or SharePoint servers, if I'm configuring those. Now that I've made that configuration, if I go and have a look inside of this same file management task again, and go into Action, this time, hopefully, there we go, we're going to go and retrieve all of the policy templates for our environment. We've pulled down our fake URL confidential, our view only, and our slightly misspelt eyes only template, which we set up a little earlier. We can then specify the schedule, as I said, that we're going to be running this file for. And I've also specified already that I'm going to run this continuously for new files. So what that means is that when somebody creates a new file, saves it onto the file share, we will actually pick that up and we'll run this file management task over those files. I've set up a second file management task as well, which is going to apply a slightly more restrictive set of rights to a file if we find that the file has the word confidential in there. So this is going to tie back. So if we see that a file is inside of data and it's marked as being highly confidential, which is just over here, then what we'll actually do is apply the view only confidential template to that file. Okay, so now that those are in place, we've configured everything that we need to on our file server in order that our users' files that they save there will be automatically protected. So let's switch across to Laurie's PC, and you can see she's already on the file server. There's no files in there at this point. I'm going to create a new Word document. Let's call this document Nothing in Here is Secret. And then let's just go into that file itself. I'm just going to add in a couple of words in here, No Secrets. And we'll save and close that document. Hit Save. And then let's go ahead and create a second file. Again, I'll do it as a Word file. And we're going to enter this file and put this as being very secret. And again, we're going to just add some details into the file. I'm just going to call this a confidential document. And again, we'll just save that file. Now you can see that already the nothing secret file was actually continuously protected already. So let's go and have a look inside of nothing in here is secret. And we'll see that even though it said nothing in here is secret, we'll have applied one of our confidential templates to it. But notice it's the confidential template and not the confidential view only template. Now wherever that file goes, it's going to retain those permissions. So we're always going to be able to keep that data protected wherever it happens to be. And now our very secret document has also been continuously protected. We'll go into that document. And in this case, you can see that we have our confidential view only has been applied to that document. So we're now applying two levels of protection, one dependent on somebody saving a document into a particular location, and another dependent on the actual contents of that document. So you can see that it allows us to get very, very granular with the protection that we can put in place onto a network share using the file classification infrastructure.
You know, one of the things I really like about FCI is that it's a bit fiddly sometimes to initially set it up, mm-hmm. and you also have some of the political challenges of what do you actually set. But yeah. once it's set up, it's a set it and forget it. And so, you know, it's one of those big bang for your buck. So once you've actually got that in place, it has really good return on investment put on down the line.
Yeah, I mean, it is a kind of a fantastic idea. Imagine that you put that in place, and then any file that anybody saves onto a file server, they don't have to think about where that file is going to go. They don't have to think about who's going to use it. It automatically just applies the right kind of settings based on the location that they've saved it to and who it is that saved it. So puts things into a pretty fantastic position and very, very easy from the end user's point of view. We've got some resources just here for deploying the rights management connector and being able to connect up the file classification infrastructure on premises as well. But we've also got a bunch of questions that came in on the Q&A during the course of the Jumpstart, and there's just a few of those that we wanted to be able to very quickly go ahead and answer. So one of those that came in early on was, is it possible to make documents openable only from computers that have been authenticated? Well, the answer to that, actually, is not really. It's kind of the wrong question. As long as the user has access to the document, we always want them to be able to access the file. Now, the rights that are associated with the file, you would hope, will be enough to restrict them from losing the information that's inside of the file. So that's kind of the approach that that we take at this point. There was a question around, is protecting SharePoint libraries any different from having them protecting with ADRMS? Actually, very, very, very similar. As we just saw there with configuring the environment for FCI, there's actually virtually no difference in the configuration of SharePoint Exchange or SharePoint or Exchange or file services based on whether you're using ADRMS or whether you're using Azure RMS. The two things have been designed to be almost identical thanks to the connector that appears on-prem. What else have we had in here? Can you access a document that has been protected when you are offline, so on an aeroplane or something? That goes down to
use license again. The best one is really useful to actually understand what's happening under the covers here. So it all depends on what your use license is set to and whether you have previously opened it or not.
There was also a question around mobile devices, and we spent a little bit of time talking about mobile devices and accessing RMS on mobile devices earlier on. And actually, we have an application, the RMS sharing application, which is available on every single platform, which makes that really, really easy in order to be able to set those kind of things up. And we also were asked for another real-world example from somewhere that we might see RMS being used inside of education. And one of those things where we might, where it could be a very, very useful use case in education is, imagine you're an educator and you are writing an exam. When you write the exam, obviously you need to write the answers to the exam at the same time. So you could protect that document with RMS, and then there's no way that any of the students could access the document unless they were given rights to access the answers. So that could be an incredibly useful way to be able to use Azure RMS in order to be able to protect those kind of documents in an educational scenario. Okay, so let's wrap up this module. Across the course of this module, we've seen the architecture that's needed for connecting your on-premises environment up to Azure RMS, and we've also shown you the configuration steps that are required in order to set everything up. Because this is the end of the last module, it's actually the end of the entire Jumpstart. So hopefully you've enjoyed following along with us for about the past 3 hours around Azure RMS. If you have any questions that we haven't yet answered, either in person or on the Jumpstart itself, then please let us know, and we'll try and get those answered. And we'll produce a blog post that has as many of the answers into those questions as we possibly can, and release that in the next week or so. Thank you very much for coming on and presenting this with me.
Thank you for inviting me.
And thank you very much for watching, and we'll see you next time on Microsoft Virtual Academy.